Hello, this is Choices, and this is your host, Judy Mario. And today we're going to have an absolutely wonderful show as we have a fabulous guest. I'm going to tell you about our guest in just a minute. As you know, this show is all about choices and the choices that we make that make our lives even better than they already are. And today our topic is, do you have difficult relationships at work? And if you do, what are the choices that you make in dealing with these difficult relationships? There are days when I used to simply not want to go to work because I had to work with some difficult people. And then there were days when I would pull up in the parking lot and I would see the car that belonged to that person, and I would get irritated before the day even started. So our guest today is the workplace relationship expert. Her name is Courtney Anderson. Courtney is an author. She's a speaker. She's an attorney. She's a judge. She's just so incredible. She's a wonderful person, and I feel very fortunate to call her my friend. We've had the good fortune to work together on many seminars across the country, and I've listened to her speak, and she's absolutely fabulous. I know you're going to enjoy her, and I'm so delighted to bring her to you today. Welcome to the show, Courtney.
Thank you so much, Judy. I am just thrilled to be here.
Well, we are thrilled to have you, and especially to talk about this subject, because there are so many people in this world that have difficult relationships at work. And I thought perhaps you could kind of explain to us what is conflict and why do we have so much of it, because I know that so many people would like to do what you call practice the joyful art of business, and I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that too.
Well, again, I am just honored to be here. I know that your listeners are some of the smartest and most focused people in terms of their own lives, and working with you and through your programs to really examine their choices and reach their full potential. So, again, this is such a great opportunity for me, and I am just appreciative. It's funny, you asked a lawyer about conflict. And I almost don't know where to start. I mean, we're people, and so every one of us carries around our own bundle of desires and needs and dreams and hopes and fears. And if we look at that and think of it sort of almost like a garden, right, our own little garden, if we tend to our own little garden, if we make sure we're on the lookout and we're vigilant, oh my goodness, is there something that's a weed that doesn't belong here that's in the wrong place? And we nurture our garden and we make sure that we focus on the soil and the water and pay attention to those things that we want to grow in our garden. And then again, that we're vigilant. The moment we see something we don't want in our garden, we think, oh my goodness, I've got to make sure that invasive or weed or something that's not appropriate in my garden is not allowed to stay. The challenge, of course, as you know, is we don't do that. We don't always. And if we walk around with our own little garden and it's untended, then when we interact with other people and they have their own little garden, and if their garden is untended, especially, they may have unmet needs, right? They may have weeds and overgrown plants that are just blocking out the ability for the things that they want to grow to even see the sun. And when that happens, you have an unmet need person meet another unmet need person. There's nothing but friction, because they're both trying desperately to reach the sun. They're trying to get their garden tended, but they haven't learned the tools. They don't know how to. And so when you encounter those people in our regular life, right, sometimes we call them family. Sometimes it's somebody that you're just born into the universe, and there you are, and you meet them, and there they have all those unmet needs, right? And all that fear and all those disappointments, and then it's bumping up against yours. You may be new to the planet, and you're thinking, oh, my goodness. And we know, and Judy, I know you've been so generous, but we've known each other for, we won't say how long, but many, many years, a decade and a half or so. And as many personal conversations, many of your listeners probably don't know how invested you are in your own continuing education. I don't know what time I talk to you where you haven't read something new and you're not exploring a new idea. I mean, this people see a sliver of it on your show and in your magazine, Choices, and in your books, of course. But they read Choices series, but they don't know how much you do this in your regular life. And you and I talked about these studies, the scientific studies they've done when a newborn comes into a family where the family is unable to tend to their needs, and they ignore the child when the child cries. And we know that just that emotional neglect, even if the child's fed appropriately, if the child is more, that it does incredible damage, right? Now, why is the child ignored? Well, because the adults have unmet needs of their own, so they're unable then to meet the needs of the new person. Do you see? And so, as we become adults and we go into the workplace, all of this comes with us. It's not like I'm an adult, I'm 18, or I'm 16, or I'm 21, or whatever age it is, whatever part of the world that your international listeners are in. What happens when we go to the workplace, it's the same situation. All those unmet needs, I'm carrying around my garden. And now my manager has unmet needs and needs blocking out the sun. My coworker, oh my goodness, there's the person who's a vendor that comes in to change out the snack machine. They've got unmet needs. And all of this friction is there. And one of the things I want to just take a moment to reflect on is the amount of damage, the damage that we do when we do not tend to our home, when we do not pay attention, and we are not vigilant. Because the truth is, Judy, and this is a sad reality for some people, although for me it's empowering, we are the only one that has the key to our own garden. No one else can come into that garden, pull those weeds, water those plants, put the nutrition in the soil. Only we are allowed access to that garden, you see? Because the garden, of course, is in our mind. And what happens at work is people go to work, unmet needs, and then people will say to me, I don't understand. My boss doesn't appreciate me and care about me. I don't feel like they respect me. I'm not even sure they're invested in my emotions. And I'll say to them, do you think your boss has the ability to meet all those needs for you? It's just not realistic. You see, Judy? Do you see?
Yes, I see. What I'm hearing you say is that we have to deal with our own issues, and we have to deal with the negativity that goes through our minds. And that conflict, perhaps, we might be a big part of that conflict. If we are getting involved in conflict, how we handle it might be based on what happened to us growing up or the way we feel about ourselves. Is that what I'm hearing you say, that it might be about our own self-confidence?
I'm going to go so far, and I hate absolutes, right? Everything, always, nothing, never. But I am going to go so far in this instance to say yes. There is no conflict unless you have internal conflict, your own untended garden that you're bringing. If you come into work and your garden, if you wake up at the start of your new day, which could be, daytime or nighttime, depending on your life schedule and your work, if you wake up, right, and your garden is tended. Oh, look how healthy those plants are with the sun, the air. My garden is tended. I feel like my needs are met. If you walk in to your work environment with your needs met, there is no conflict. That doesn't mean that you're not going to meet people who aren't full of their own internal conflict, but you need two parties, right? It takes two to tango. And if you walk into work and all your needs are met and your garden's tended and there you are, you're coming to work with a realistic expectation for what the workplace can do for your needs. And like I mentioned earlier, one of the things I dealt with recently, Judy, that just is, it's really shocking to me, is the unrealistic expectation of people have to work. Like, their work is supposed to, again, make them feel confident, give them all the financial security in the world, guarantee and promise them a lifetime of bliss and joy, continue to make sure they're never bored, create opportunities for them to reach new heights and explore new skills. It's almost like somebody describing a fantasy, spouse. And you and I know that no matter how wonderful and awesome a personal relationship is, a romantic relationship with a spouse, they're not going to be your whole life. No one can be that. Because, as we said earlier, you have your own garden and they have their own garden. It's unhealthy. for you to try to ignore your garden and run over and deal with their garden. You you bring your garden tended to someone else who has their garden tended, and that's a healthy relationship. At work, there's so many people.
But what if we?
Oh, go ahead.
But what if we go to work and we just don't feel valued there?
There's two answers to that issue. One is perception is reality, right? So if I don't feel valued, then I'm not valued. The challenge with that part with that though is so often the reason somebody doesn't feel valued has nothing to do with the job at all. It's just like it's the same thing in your life outside of work, right? So I've been a lawyer for almost 20 years now, and I used to handle divorces and family law situations. And so somebody was talking to me today at my law firm about their marriage, and they were telling me how horrible it was, and they were like, "Oh, I just don't feel valued. I don't feel valued at all." And I'm thinking, "Oh my goodness, what's happening? Maybe is the person being disloyal? Is the person abusive or neglectful? Is the person cruel?" And then the person, the spouse I'm referring to, he'll say something like, even though he's with me all the time and he tells me how much he loves me and how beautiful I am, and he's always taking time to ask me how I feel and how my day was and how he can help me, I still just feel, that he could be with something better. Okay. But in that situation, the poor spouse is doing literally everything you could possibly imagine in a romance novel, right, or a movie. But the person is still sitting there saying they're complaining that they don't feel valued. That's because it's inside of them. It's their own garden. It has nothing to do with the other person. That may be something that happened in their family of origin. It may be something that happened when they were in, middle school with some mean girl that they didn't feel wanted to be their friend. It may be nothing. There may have been no event anywhere to anyone who's ever objectively private. It might just be that they just keep saying to themselves, "You're not worth it. You shouldn't be valued. He's too good of a person for you." Now, Judy, I've worked with so many people like this. Have you? I'm sure, had experience with this type of personality where you listening or paying attention and there's nothing there at all the person has done to be showing the other party they don't value them. It's all in their head. And that's their untended garden. So that's the first part of that challenge. I don't feel valued at work. Well, the first part of it is it may be somebody who doesn't feel valued anywhere at all. Right?
That's very possible.
Well, I've had people who are senior executives in organizations. Literally, they lead the organization. Tell me they don't feel valued. You run it. So it's not necessarily a correlation that you don't feel valued and that the other party, the workplace, or the person in an outside work relationship has done anything at all that makes you feel valued. It may all be a problem. The second part option, though, is maybe there is something. The second option is your garden is tended. You feel that you deserve and the best that life has to offer you. You're confident. You're assertive. You're monitoring yourself and focusing on your own emotions and needs. And you may be in a workplace where you say that you don't feel valued, and it may be because it may be that everybody else was invited to the retreat and you were told no, don't come. We think your ideas are horrible. Okay, that's a pretty explicit example. And those types of situations where something really is happening, it might be an event that is very serious, or it might be a pattern of events that maybe are less serious, but cumulatively results in the fact that you really are being excluded or ostracized or devalued. If that's actually happening, then what can we do? The question I always ask people is, can you change other people?
Well, I don't think that's possible. I think the question is, what do we got to do? Whether we react or respond to that other person and their behavior? If you've got a person that you're working with that's really, really difficult, I mean, whether they're like a bully or they're a whiner or they explode every now and then. Most of the time they're a nice person, but they explode. Should you just avoid those people? What should you do when you've got those kind of people that you work with?
Everything depends on the question, what do you want? The first question and the last question I ask a legal client, a consulting client, a student, what do you want? Because that's everything. I don't know what other people want because I'm not in their garden, only they are. And so if somebody says to me, the most important thing that I want is to be valued, And then the reality is that they're not valued. And we also know, because you just clarified, which is what the data tells us. I don't have the ability to reach in somebody else's garden and change their behavior. So you're either going to stay where you are and accept the behavior if you're not being valued or bullied or whatever, or you're going to change. You're either going to change. Maybe people sometimes hold on to this imaginary fantasy that they're going to, imaginary fantasy is redundant, but hold on to this sort of idea that, I'll just change. You know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So I'll just stay in a situation where I am bullied, neglected, abused, not valued, but it won't bother me anymore. That I've not found that to be reasonable. It's not rational at all. It already are people able to tolerate incredible amounts of abuse?
Yes.
People are able to tolerate abuse up into and including, you know, criminal acts and violence and all types of things. The question isn't are you able to handle the abuse if you decide to stay there and be abused? My advice, yeah, you can. People do it all the time. My question again is, what do you want? If you say to me, well, I want to be abused, then stay there and continue to let them abuse you. If you say to me, I don't want to be abused, you have to accept a couple of facts. You can't change other people. You're not going to magically change where you're not going to feel hurt and abused when you actually are being hurt and abused. So you're going to have to change the situation. You're going to have to go to a different department, a different area, a different company, a different location. That's the reality. And again, I make all these analogies in my programs and training about inside our workplace and our outside workplace life because they're so similar. And I think a lot of times we want to pretend at work, oh, it's not the same, it's at work. No, it's similar. If you're in an outside work relationship with a friend or a family member or a loved one or a spouse and they're abusive and bullying you and you ask me what are you going to do about it, it's the same answer. You're not going to be able to make them stop doing what they're doing. You're not going to be able to change your own behavior where it doesn't hurt you that you're being bullied and abused. So you're going to need to then change the situation. Maybe live in a different place, be around other people. And that's the part where people get stuck. And that's when your show and your magazine, your book, seminars and summits, your programs and resources, that's what you're trying to help people do is work through that because that's where they get stuck. Because they'll say, well, I don't want to change. I just want the other person to change. And that's,
yes,
I hear that, but it's not, we don't know as of this moment any way for that to happen.
Yes, and we know we can't change other people. But I think what happens a lot of times is that people get into the workplace, I believe we all pick our profession. What happens is we get a job because we need money, and then as we get older, we have a tendency to kind of stay in that same job because it's in our comfort zone. And I believe a lot of people feel they don't have a lot of choices in life. I believe that a lot of people feel like, well, I need the insurance, so I need to stay here, or I don't have the skills to go out and get another job. And so they kind of get stuck in this workplace where they have to deal with those other people that are difficult to be around. And I believe what may be difficult for me, to be around somebody who's very difficult, it may not be difficult for you at all because we see these situations differently or we feel differently. So if I'm feeling stuck, if I'm feeling like I don't have any choices, that this is what I have to do, what can I do about that? How can I get out of that thinking? How can I change to where I'm not around these people or I can deal with these people, but would I tell them, would I confront them, would I tell them to quit complaining or to quit being the way they're being toward me, and what if they're my boss? I gave you a lot of questions at once, I'm sorry. Pick one.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly sort of the paradigm that people perceive themselves to be. The reality, of course, is you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And on my talk show, which is at CourtneyAnderson.com, your listeners, I invite you to come to CourtneyAnderson.com and there are links to all my different shows and programs. I just did a show on that very recently. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And the reality is we tell ourselves we have to do things. But you don't have to. You don't have to work. You don't have to work. Not only do you not have to work with that boss or the bully or those coworkers or in that location, you don't have to work at all. normal people or know of people who could work, mentally, physically healthy, but they choose not to. So their existence means they don't have to. I've had people say to me, well, you have to pay their taxes. And I'll say, well, that's not true. If that was true, then there wouldn't be anybody in prison for not paying their taxes. But guess what? There are. So that means that you don't have to do it. What I'm saying is there's a consequence for the choice to not pay your taxes, but that's a choice. And people exercise that choice all the time. For work, you either, look, okay, you ask, should they go tell the person you're bullying me, should stop bullying me? I think a better question is, you know, what will that do? What will the outcome be? What are you going to get out of it? And again, people go to that magical thinking, and people think, well, you know, if I tell them it hurts my feelings and they tell me I'm an idiot, then they'll stop calling me an idiot. No, it won't. It might. It's a possibility of anything. Anything is possible. It is not probable. It is not likely that you're going to go to someone who's already abusing you. And because it presupposes that the person who's abusing you is unaware that they're abusing you. And that's not logical. The whole reason somebody at work is calling you an idiot is because they know it's gonna have an outcome to cause you pain. That's why they're doing it. It's not under job requirement. It says first duty, tend to the account receivable. Second duty, call your coworker an idiot. It doesn't say that. They weren't supposed to do that. They did that as like an extra on their own choice and accord because they wanted to cause you pain. That's why they did it. So for you to go to them with this sort of naive idea, well, I'm sure they're not aware that calling me an idiot causes me pain. It's not logical. The only reason to insult somebody is to insult them and cause them pain. You don't do it because you're told to at your job, and you're not doing it because it's an accident. You did it intentionally because you wanted that outcome, and it worked. So to go to somebody who did something that's working for them and say to them, stop doing that because it's working really well. It's causing me so much pain. I'm coming to you to remind you that it's working well. I mean, it's not logical. And I've used the word logic all the time. Why? Because I look at all of these questions about people at work and feelings and relationships and mean bosses and frenemies and bullies and jealous coworkers and blah, blah, blah. It's all about systems and solutions. They're systems of interaction. They're behavioral patterns. And you need to step aside from the names and the labels that you put on all the players and just look at what's happening. What's the dynamic? And that's why I so often will take a dynamic in a workplace and say, what do you do if that dynamic happened outside the workplace? The same, because it's the same dynamic in terms of the interpersonal relationship, the behavioral pattern, and the intent. And so, yes, can you say to somebody about bullying? Yes, you can say it. Should you? I would argue, what's the point? What are you going to get out of it? Nothing, other than reminding the person how well they're doing at achieving their goal of causing you pain. But if that makes you feel better, I don't see how that would make you feel better because you claim it causes you pain, but who has their own, you know, decision? What do you do? How do you face what you ask with questions about, you know, getting to the point where you understand that this life is this life and that there's so many decisions that you make that are relating to the outcomes you have? It's all about what your community listeners want. If somebody, again, some of the most painful, horrible work situations I've been in were as practicing law, as an attorney practicing law, and somebody's telling me about, you know, a family or a marriage where they're being, you know, beaten and abused, and then they tell me they don't want to leave. Because what can I do? I don't have the magic ability to stop somebody from beating you up. And the big challenge because that's not my client. The person who's talking to me, my client is not being beat up. And they're asking me how to stop from being beat up. And I'm telling them, okay, we're going to go. I can go in most parts of the world, many parts of the world, for your international listeners. You can go to a legal system and use a process where you can try to get court orders to tell someone to stay away from somebody, a restraining order, a protective order. People say, oh, I don't want to do that. Okay. And then I'll say, well, if you don't want to go and try to get the court to intervene, because the idea there is you'll get a court order, and then if the person does come again close to you to try to do harm, then they could be arrested. And then that will physically remove them from the ability to, you know, keep physically beating you up. But somebody says, I don't want to do that. Okay. Well, then either the person who's beating you up needs to go somewhere else, whether it's prison or somewhere else, or you need to go somewhere else. But if you ask me, can you stay in the same place with the person who's beating you up, and there's some other sort of magic or mystical thing that will come along and make it stop? Judy, if that exists, I'm not aware of it. And that trap is it's emotional. You know, it's emotional to talk about, just thinking back about, I'm in my mind right now, seeing images of customers I had, clients, men, women, all ages, all different economic backgrounds, and these abusive, violent, destructive relationships. And they get, as you try to believe in, they're not stuck. But they cling to this idea that I'm going to be able to stay in the same place with the proper person who can stay in the same place, and everything will be great if they'll just stop being violent and abusive. Well, sure, it would be. But I don't have control over that, and neither do you, and you refuse to do things to change it. And I've had people I've watched walk down a hallway and go right back into that environment, and it's heartbreaking. But the reality is I should no more save that person from themselves than any of us can. And if they refuse to save themselves, if they refuse to remove themselves from those situations, what can we do? And part of the reason I use some of these examples is because that's how serious it is at work. I mean, people sometimes laugh and giggle, oh, we're such a relationship. Oh, sometimes people need you. But go look in any part of the world at the documentation and what happens at work, especially in court cases. And it's just as disturbing, if not more disturbing, as the things that people do in their private lives, with violence, abuse, harassment. These aren't things that are little minor jokes. These are situations that can escalate to just the most abhorrent and unconscionable and sickening behavior you can imagine. The challenge is, how do you stop someone from sitting there and taking the abuse? And my answer is, you have to beg them, try to show them what's really happening, walk them through logically. You know, I'll always say to people, have you tried talking to the bully at work?
Yeah, they did, and they didn't do anything.
Exactly. Well, of course they didn't. Because all you did is remind them how successful it is. So they probably bullied you more, right? It's working, right? I'm really getting to them. I'm causing pain. There's goal and intent. When they wake up, believe it or not, I'm oversimplifying this, but it really is. Remember the untended garden I mentioned earlier? Their garden is overrun with weeds. It's blocked out from the sun. Things are dying. They're in pain, remember? And they're carrying that with them. All they're trying to do by bullying and berating and harassing and abusing other people, they're trying, it's an ineffective way to reach their goal, but what they're trying desperately to do is to get their unmet need fulfilled. And because they don't have any other tool and they don't know better, all they know is the pain, right? They're in pain. So that's what they're doing. They're in pain, so you know what? They're going to take that pain, and they're going to sweat it. And they're going to push it out. And they're going to do it because that's all that they know.
You know, when I hear you talking about this, and we're coming close to the end of our time today, it reminds me of a very wonderful book I read by Dr. Viktor Frankl. It was... Man's Search for Meaning was the name of it. And in his book, he said, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances and to choose one's own way. So even in those horrible, horrible circumstances, we can choose our attitude. We can choose the way people treat us. We can choose whether we stay there or we move forward. Thank you so much, Courtney Anderson, author, speaker, attorney, judge, wonderful friend of mine. Thank you so much for being with us today and talking with us about having difficult relationships at work and how we can deal with conflict, because we may not be able to avoid all conflict, but we may not be able to resolve everything the way we'd like, but we can control how we choose to react or respond. Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you so much, Judy, and for having your program and helping all of your listeners and for all of the work that you've done and continue to do around the world. Thank you.
Wonderful. I appreciate you. And listeners, I want you to remember this. No matter what you're dealing with at work, what kind of difficult relationships you have there, or even in your home life, always, always, always remember, you are more than enough.